Okay. Do you have any questions? We have time for one or two questions.
When does a mental direct perceiver that is a direct valid cognizer exist? Because you're saying that for the mental direct perceiver that is which is a valid cognizer, right? A mental direct perceiver for ordinary beings, it only exists, it's only a AAA. Okay? Then how about the direct valid cognizer? I mean, it exists, you know, in a continuum of what kind of being?
Chidang, kasan suyuk tira wakasa. Soso jogo jogo sumzi yunga labai na, nala mani wala chayashi. So, the human time and element law is similar.
So, the human
is similar. So, the human element law is similar.
So, not all the mental direct perceivers in the continuum ordinary beings are awarenesses to which an object appears, but it's not ascertained. For example, the mental direct perceiver apprehending form in the continuum of ordinary being. That, yes, we say that is AAA, So, are there mental direct valid cognizers in the continuum of ordinary beings? The answer is yes, it's possible. So when mental direct perceivers are divided, there are mental direct perceivers which are valid cognizers, which are subsequent cognizers, which are awarenesses to which an object appears but is not ascertained. So let's say the clairvoyance in the clairvoyance in the mind of an ordinary being, clairvoyance that knows in another person's mind, that so the first moment of that you can posit as mental direct valid cognizer. Yeah? Mental direct valid cognizer. Is that how we say it? Is that how we say it? Mental direct valid cognizer, right? Oh, mental direct valid cognizer, yeah. So the basically the question from Kelvin is that basically can there be mental direct perceivers which are valid cognizers, yeah? In the continuum of ordinary being, yes, the answer.
Then another question is regarding about the way that the consciousness actually apprehends actually perception. Actually the question is actually regarding perception. Okay, so when a consciousness actually apprehends the object, right, the process of the perception itself, right, at which stage is the object that it that they apprehend, right? When is it known as an appearing object, and then when is it known as an object of engagement? You know, the various term. Yeah, because it seems like for example the eye consciousness apprehending blue, right? You know. So we say that blue is an appearing object. Then at which stage of the eye, you know, when it we're saying that an aspect of it is cast, you know, cast of the object is actually cast to the eye, sense power, right? You know. So when does it become the appearing object? And when is it the object of engagement?
So when blue appears to the eye consciousness apprehending it, then it becomes its appearing object. And when it when the eye consciousness apprehends blue, realizes blue, then blue becomes the object of the mode of apprehension.
There's no like timing when it happened, and I don't know how to split that.
No, I mean at which part of the process itself, right? Of the eye apprehending, you know, when is it known as a like object of engagement? Because the reason why I'm asking this question, right, is that seems like from Sarah's side, the assertion is that for wrong consciousness, right, wrong non-conceptual consciousness, there's no object of engagement. You know. So why is it no object of engagement? Yeah. You know, then the appearing object itself, it seems like the appearing object itself is not the external object that it misapprehends also. So, you know, so what exactly then is the appearing object and the object of engagement in the process of perception?
You know, the reason for not positing an object of engagement for wrong consciousness, I believe I explained it before, right?
Yes, because you say that it does not realize its object, right? It realizes nothing, right? Because that is a non-existent, right? The object that appears.
No, that's not the reason, eh?
Well, not for that.
Okay.
This is regarding the notes on the non-valid awarenesses. So in the actual notes themselves, on page 3, under the awareness to which an object appears, after the definition, there's one paragraph there. Okay, so first thing is to check with Venerable Gyume, is there actually a typo? Because in this section, it keeps on referring to the object of operation.
Yes.
Should it be object of engagement? That's to just confirm.
I don't know. I'm not the translator.
The
text. So.
Okay. Then first question is, can Ken Rinpoche please explain the meaning of the second paragraph, which starts with, however, one should know the manner in which not to posit as the definition, that whole paragraph, don't understand. And also, under doubting consciousness, the first paragraph after the definition also don't understand. Sorry. Thank you. Okay, so in the first place, what is the definition of an awareness to which an object appears but is not ascertained? Yeah. So the definition here is a knower that is a common locus of having clear appearance of the specifically characterized phenomenon which is its object of engagement, and being unable to induce ascertainment with respect to the specifically characterized phenomenon which is its object of operation. So according to the author, this is how you should posit the definition of an awareness to which an object appears without being ascertained, right? So the second paragraph is basically, the author is saying that that is not how you should define an AAA. Right? The paragraph following the definition is basically a very long way of saying that is not how you should define an AAA. You should say object of engagement rather than saying object. For example, you cannot say it is a knower that is a common locus of having a clear appearance of the specifically characterized phenomenon which is its object. And so forth. So the point here is saying that in defining what an AAA is, you have to say that it is a knower that is a common locus of having a clear appearance of the specifically characterized phenomenon which is object of operation or object of engagement. You cannot say, you cannot just say the specifically characterized phenomenon which is its object. So that's the... So basically that's what the author is saying. You have to include object of engagement. You cannot just say it's object alone. Why? If you just say the specifically characterized phenomenon, which is its object, and then you just leave it and that as being the definition of an AAA, then they will incur the fallacy
that an eye consciousness apprehending a blue snow mountain, that will make that eye consciousness apprehending a blue snow mountain to be an AAA. Hello? 你好, are you here? Huh? Yeah, okay. Yeah, well. Basically, if we define an AAA to be like this, you know, instead of the one you see in bold, yeah? In bold, that's the Bible, right? Huh? Right? So if you want to be a Satan and you say, it is a knower that is a common locus of having a clear appearance of the specifically characterized phenomenon which is its object. Just leave it as that, yeah? And being unable to induce ascertainment with respect to the specifically characterized phenomenon which is its object. If you just say it like this, yeah? And if you say that that's the definition of an AAA, okay? Then, an eye consciousness apprehending blue snow mountain would fulfill this definition. Yeah. So then an eye consciousness apprehending blue snow mountain will fulfill this definition, the definition that doesn't have object of engagement in it, right? Then this will make this eye consciousness apprehending blue snow mountain to be an awareness to which an object appears but is not ascertained. So, but if you define an AAA as a knower that is a common locus of having a clear appearance of the specifically characterized phenomenon which is its object of engagement, this will eliminate the eye consciousness apprehending blue snow mountain to be an AAA. Because it is not an AAA. Well, having said this, yeah. So we must figure out how does eliminating object of engagement from the definition, you know, and adding the object of engagement back into the definition, how does it clearly solve the problem here? The problem that we just brought up. So, based on this definition of an AAA, the actual definition, the real one, yeah. Then is an AAA a factually concordant consciousness? Is it a factually concordant knower, or it is a factually discordant knower? What do you think? I believe we put a question mark in one of the earlier notes, right? So is an AAA necessarily a factually concordant consciousness? Factually concordant knower? What's your reason?
No, not necessarily. Then give an example.
Is an awareness to which an object appears but is not ascertained, is it a factually concordant knower or not? Is it a factually concordant knower or not? Huh? Is it necessarily a factually concordant knower or not? You know what is a factually concordant knower and what is a factually discordant knower? So if you look at the illustration of an AAA, for example, sense direct perceiver apprehending blue or apprehending form, right? Or basically when your mind is absorbed, you know, absorbed in something, you know, your mind is completely absorbed in something, and then something, you know, something passes by, you know, you kind of see something, but you're not sure what you saw, that kind of stuff, or you heard something, you're not sure what you heard. So that kind of mind, AAA, is it effectually concordant knower? You heard something, you saw something, while you were immersed in something else, and your mind was completely like, you know, absorbed, let's say. Was that a bird? And that kind of thing. So you're saying that in order to be effectually concordant knower, he has to ascertain his object? Okay, so the illustrations are given here. So the first one, the sense direct perceiver apprehending blue, which induces the doubt that wonders, did I see blue or not? So, I mean, there are times when we actually see certain things, right? But then at the end, but later on, we are not exactly sure whether we saw it or not. You know? And I was like, you know, so, you know, there can be this eye consciousness or sense direct perceiver that induces such a doubt, yeah, later on. Yeah. So it doesn't matter whether it's blue, red, or whatever, donkey or cow, whatever, like, you know, basically, you know, it's like, eh? Did I see it? No, did I not?
Oh, to see that to that this what that you don't have to that not my do that see because I'm going to see the other part of the thing. That to see that I'm not that some check. No, that some the lap. That wrong to be tiny to be fast. That to see that. That to see that that some check.
So anyway, okay, something to think about, yeah. Then as for doubt, yeah. It is a knower which has qualms too pointedly by its own power. And when divided, there are three. So why is by its own power, you know, included in the definition? So if it is a doubting consciousness, it is necessarily a knower which is qualms too pointedly by its own power. Yeah. The reason why you need to put in by its own power is this. So there is a mind that is concomitant, a main mind that is concomitant with doubt. And within and in the retinue of this main mind, there are other mental factors such as feeling, discrimination, and so on and so forth. Those mental factors are they doubt? Are they a knower which has qualms two-pointedly? Yes. But these mental factors, they're in the retinue of the main mind that the doubt is concomitant with. These mental factors, although they have qualms two-pointedly, but they do not have qualms two-pointedly by their own power. And it's coming, eh? Mind and mental factors coming. Okay, make it simple. The main mind that this that doubt is concomitant with, that main mind is not doubt, basically. That's the end of the day, that's what it means. There's a difference between a main mind and a mental factor. Doubt is a mental factor. Right? Doubt is concomitant with a main mind. Yeah? And the main mind that it is that doubt is concomitant with, that main mind is not doubt. It is not the main mind, it's not doubt. Because it is doubt, it is necessarily a mental factor. The main mind that is concomitant with the mental factor of doubt, that main mind has qualms two-pointedly, but it doesn't have qualms two-pointedly by its own power. So that main mind is not doubt. Anyway, as long as you know why in the definition of a doubting consciousness the words by its own power is in there, as long as you know why, that's fine. You know why? Because doubt is a mental factor, there's a main mind that is concomitant with it. This main mind, you will come soon, you'll be clear why. But this main mind also have qualms, two-pointedly. But it is not it's not a doubt. Because although he has qualms two-pointedly, that is not due to his own power, not due to the power of the main mind. So therefore, the main mind is not doubt. Okay. So the main mind is concomitant with doubt. That main mind also, in English, is doubting, basically, which means in English it has qualms two-pointedly. But it is nevertheless, at the end of the day, it's not a doubt. Because it is the main mind has qualms two-pointedly about the object, but it is so due to the power of the mental factor of doubt, not by its own power. Okay? So when doubt, doubt and consciousness are divided, then there are these three. Yeah. The doubt tending towards the factual, doubt tending towards the non-factual, and an equal doubt.
What in this? That and that, then you get some stuff on the table. That and the change for an hour, is it? Present that. That dark on the best, that some doubt it, then you get some shine.
So, an illustration of a doubt tending towards the factual is the doubt which thinks that sound is probably impermanent. So, in reality, the fact is that sound, you know, is impermanent, yeah. Okay? So the doubt tending towards the factual, you know, an illustration of this is the mind which thinks, the mind still has doubt, yeah. Still not sure, but the mind is thinking, yeah, probably, it's probably impermanent. Although it's a doubt, but it is a doubt that is tending towards the factual, kind of according, you know, in accordance with how sound actually exists, yeah. Right? I mean, it's the same in Tibetan, Jukyu, object of engagement. But, yeah, she's translated it as operator of operation in the second part, yeah. It's not really a typo, it's, yeah. Basically, it's, yeah, object engagement, you can treat it as. But she's trying to bring across something.
What does she need? That just on that to do it. That's what I'm saying. That energy that, that time you get some stuff and that dark on the tell some talk to that time you tell them.
So, the doubt which thinks that sound is probably permanent. Probably permanent. It's a doubt tending towards the non-factual. The reality is that sound is not permanent. So if you have doubts, you know, if you kind of wonder, if you think a sound may be permanent or sound is probably permanent, and then that will be there is a doubt, yeah, and it is a doubt that tends towards the non-factual. Then the doubt which wonders whether sound is permanent or impermanent is posited to be an illustration of equal doubt.
Seems like here now that the doubt and doubting consciousness refer to the same entity, same thing. If that's the case, because I remember Ken Richard mentioned that the sevenfold division of consciousnesses are talking about main minds. So if this is not a main mind but a mental factor, then how do we reconcile that?
So if it was said, then it shouldn't be the case.
So in other words, out of the seven, this is the only one that is a mental factor. The other six are main minds. Because in the 51 mental factors mentioned in the text, other than doubt, I don't see other of these six, the other six mentioned inside the mental factors, other than doubt.
So we have to think about it. If it is a direct perceive, is a direct perceiver necessarily a main mind? What about an inferential cognizer? Is it necessarily a main mind? So let's say a sense direct valid cognizer. It is a new incontrovertible knower, free of conceptuality, which arises in dependence upon its own uncommon empowering condition of physical sense power, isn't it? So judging, going by this definition, then is a sense direct valid cognizer necessarily a me in mind? So you have a sense direct valid cognizer, yeah. So in the retinue of this knower, there's a mental factor of discrimination, right? Is the mental factor of the discrimination necessarily a valid cognizer? No, it's a question, you know. So so when you reply, then there can be a, you know.
Somebody talk must communicate that.
Okay, first the question is this. In the sevenfold division of consciousness, is doubt the only mental factor in there? Are the rest necessarily main minds only? So you have a sense consciousness, right? Okay? Sense consciousness. In the retinue of this sense consciousness, you know, there are mental factors of discrimination, right? Is the discrimination that is concomitant with this sense consciousness, is that mental factor of discrimination and sense consciousness or not? You have to say.
No, only one answer. Huh?
Okay, so anyway, when we think about the sevenfold division of consciousness, besides doubt, are the rest necessarily main minds? How do you translate that? No, mind, sentience, right? I think sentience, right? Yeah, mean is the sentience. Yi zhou sem tang. Yi sem tang.
Sen.
Yi.
Number
xie ba.
Number xie ba.
So in you know, when we use the word mind in general, it refers to main minds. You know, when you use the word mind in general, when we talk about mind, we are usually talking about the main mind. So mind, sentience, and primary consciousness. These three are mutually inclusive. Yeah.
Number seven, primary consciousness. The main mind. Number seven,
so, okay, mind, sentience, and primary consciousness. Sometimes primary consciousness is translated as perceiver. Okay, anyway, mind, sentience, and primary consciousness, these three are mutually inclusive. What they mean at the end of the day, what are they driving at? They all mean main mind, a main mind. Okay? So having said that, mind, sentience, and primary consciousness are mutually inclusive. So then there's definitely there has to be a difference between sentience and mental consciousness. Okay. So maybe this will make it clearer. So if we look at it in terms of possibilities, yeah. But in the first place, do you get it? Mind, is it memorized first? Okay, don't worry. Mind, sentience, and primary consciousness or perceiver. These three are mutually inclusive. Having said this, then there's a difference between sentience and mental consciousness. Yi sentience, yeah. Yi namshe is a mental consciousness. So how many possibilities are there between these two? There are four. So okay, there are four possibilities between sentience and mental consciousness. Okay, eye consciousness. I perceive, you know. Number seven, me, I perceive. I primary consciousness. So I perceiver. I think it's translated as I perceiver in the Elizabeth Nepper's text. I perceiver or I primary consciousness. Okay. This is a sentience because it is a main mind. But it is not a mental consciousness. Why? Because it is a sense consciousness. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay?
This one. That Taganashi, that did you not die? Then a Yiki number shape, and a quarter jungle, and Sorosi. Yiki number shape, quarter jungle, Sorosi. No, Tidaudi, that Yiki Shabares, and a Yimares.
So maybe we just stick to one translation, okay? So we have mind, and then you have sentience, and you have primary consciousness. Okay, these three are mutually inclusive. Vale? mind, sentience, and primary consciousness. So these three are mutually inclusive. They're all talking about main minds. So now we're here to examine the possibilities between sentience and mental consciousness. Okay? So something which is a sentience but not a mental consciousness would be an I consciousness. Yeah? I primary consciousness. An I primary consciousness is a sentience, but it is not a mental consciousness because it is a sense consciousness. Okay, then. Then something which is a mental consciousness but is not a sentience. Example, the mental factor of feeling that is concomitant with a mental primary consciousness. The mental factor of feeling which is concomitant with a mental primary consciousness, that is a mental consciousness, but it is not a sentience. Because it is a mental factor. If it is, yeah, sentience is a main mind, right? So something that is sentience and mental consciousness, mental primary consciousness. A mental primary consciousness is a sentience, it's a main mind. It is also a mental consciousness. So there's something that's both, yeah? Okay, something that is not both. Something that is not a sentience and is not a mental consciousness. The mental factor of feeling that is concomitant with an I consciousness. Concomitant with an I primary consciousness. Oh, God. This is that mental factor of feeling is not a sentience because it's the mental factor. It is not a mental consciousness because it is a sense consciousness.
Okay?
Actually, it's not difficult. You just have to know what is mutually inclusive. Those three things, yeah. Mind, in Tibetan it's easier, in English it's like mind, sentience, and what? Primary consciousness. Oh, God. English is very funny, primary consciousness. But anyway, primary consciousness, sentience, and what? Mind, yes. These three are mutually inclusive. There's just three different ways of saying the same thing. They're all referring to the same thing. Yi sem number shiva.
I think better learn Tibetan.
When we say yi, yeah, sentience, it is main mind basically. In Tibetan, the root word is the same, the yi. Yi, in translated, on its own is sentient. Then we will put it with yi number shaver, that will be mental. Usually the yi usually is translated as mental. Yeah. But on its own as a main mind, then it is translated as sentient. Then yi number shaver will be mental primary consciousness. But in English it's very different, right? Sentience and mental primary consciousness, right? But in Tibetan it's yi and yi number shaver. So looks the same but it's not the same. So in order to show that it's not the same, and then we do this exercise, no? It's not, that's not the only reason, but you know. But we go into this exercise of the four possibilities, yeah. Sentience.
I was just wondering, because in the earlier parts of the Lowric notes, we were told that awareness, knower, and one more thing I couldn't remember. We think there were three terms that were synonymous. Yeah, awareness, knower, and consciousness were synonymous with each other. But it was always at the back of my mind. I always wanted to ask, how come mind was not included amongst this list of synonyms? Is it because now, you're mentioning mind and sentience and primary consciousness, so I'm just wondering whether mind refers specifically to a main mind, or rather my question should be, how different is mind from awareness, consciousness, and
mind, we say sem in Tibetan, yeah, sem. Sem. When we say mind or sem, it means main mind. Therefore, it is not mutually inclusive with, you know, with awareness, knower, and consciousness. Right at the beginning, yeah, you know, those three are mutually inclusive, right?
Partly also from one of the members' question. Ascertain and realize, they are interchangeable, right? They mean the same thing here, right?
What?
When you say ascertain, like, you know, awareness to which object appear, but not ascertain. Oh. When you talk about something that's ascertained, it means that you realize it, right? And when you say realize, it means you ascertain. So, in that sense, when Cecilia asked the question about this conceptual consciousness following the sequence of eye consciousness apprehending blue, then mental consciousness apprehending blue.
Mental direct perceiver.
Mental direct perceiver apprehending blue, then followed by the conceptual consciousness apprehending blue. That conceptual consciousness is a subsequent cognizer. But for ordinary being, mental direct perceiver is actually awareness to which object does not, or object appears but not ascertained. So since it doesn't realize, and yet it can induce a subsequent cognizer that realizes something that is already realized.
A subsequent cognizer is knower that realizes what has really been realized, and it has to be induced, therefore, by a valid cognizer. So that which induces this subsequent cognizer need not be the mental direct perceiver apprehending blue, right? This is the eye consciousness apprehending blue.
So actually, so does it really necessarily, is it really necessary for a mental direct perceiver to be the in-between form?
You mean if it's not necessary, you can just take it out?
Yeah.
But it exists, what?
Yeah, but what I mean is that
what does it
eye
do?
Consciousness is clear and knowing, right? So it really why can't the conceptual consciousness be induced by an eye consciousness directly without a mental direct perceiver?
This is what they say in the text. But it's difficult for us to experience it precisely because of the reason that it lasts only for the shortest of moments, right? So, but this mental direct perceiver apprehending form in a continuum of ordinary being is posited to be an AAA. And so therefore it cannot induce a subsequent cognizer. A subsequent cognizer has to be induced by a valid cognizer, right? So in this case then, you have to posit the eye consciousness apprehending blue lah, to be the valid cognizer that induces the subsequent cognizer.
Okay. So another question is with regards to this wrong consciousness. Under the pitch tree of this, the previous handout, under awareness to which object appear but not certain, there is this part that says, okay, the definition of awareness to which object appears but not certain, then there's a third paragraph from there. It says, since it's appearing object, comma, the white color of snow mountains appears clearly as blue, whereas it does not exist as blue, blah blah blah, actually implies that for this wrong consciousness, the appearing object is white snow mountain.
What?
Isn't it? But blue snow mountain must appear somehow, right? If not, then you cannot say you clear appearance of this blue snow mountain.
So you have a problem with the appearing object, basically. So
yeah.
Is it white snow mountain or blue snow mountain,
yeah,
right?
I'm not citing anyone. It's just that previously it says that most probably it's a blue.
No,
snow
no,
mountain.
We don't say most probably. Perhaps it can be blue.
No, I mean previously in the previous class, and Patricia asked. The translation.
One moon has two moons.
Perhaps it's two moons, right? But here it says here that then the appearing object is white color, it's no more than.
The definition is having a clear appearance of the specifically characterized phenomenon which is its object of engagement. So if you say that, then you cannot posit blue snow mountain, right? Because is there such a thing as a blue snow mountain which is a specifically characterized
phenomenon?
So you have to posit a white snow mountain. So whether you put snow mountain or put white snow mountain, it's okay.
Carbon
Okay, so I mean, yeah, I mean, this is a bit complicated, yeah. So if we posit snow mountain or white snow mountain to be the appearing object, yeah. So then, does the snow mountain appear as white or not? Does the white snow mountain appear as white? To the eye consciousness to which blue snow mountain appears, to that eye consciousness, how does white snow mountain appears?
White snow mountain appears blue.
Does white snow mountain appear?
Yes.
So we have to say that white snow mountain appears, but white snow mountain does not appear as white.
Okay, anyway, this, I don't know if
semantics. Huh? Semantics.
Okay. You can say that. That when you answer some numbers, do that. Kari shall not. Kari kabo shall not. That is shabash. That Kari mo bo shall not.
You
want to answer some numbers in Liza? That answer some numbers shall not. Kari not Kari kabo shall not.
Yeah, because of the definition, that which has having a clear appearance of the specifically characterized phenomenon, which is its object of operation. Yeah, so then you cannot posit, you cannot say blue snow mountain. You have to say snow mountain or white snow mountain, right? Seems like it is said somewhere that whatever appears to a non-conceptual consciousness is its appearing object. To that non-conceptual consciousness, whatever appears to that non-conceptual consciousness, that is posited, that which appears is posited to be its appearing object. So if that's the case, then there's nothing wrong in saying that blue snow mountain is the appearing object of the consciousness to which a blue snow mountain appears. Told you it's semantics really. So blue snow mountain is the appearing object. Blue snow mountain is the appearing object of the consciousness to which blue snow mountain appears. Yeah. But is it an appearing object in general? No. No. Is it an appearing object? No. In general, blue snow mountain is not an appearing object, isn't it?
Correct.
So I don't remember exactly where, but it seems that there's a text which says something like whatever appears to a non-conceptual consciousness is its appearing object.
For Sutra school, right, the first moment of realizing selflessness of person directly, in the special insight class, we say that, you know, for such a person, right, nothing appears except emptiness for that first moment. So in this school, that first moment, what actually appears? The first moment of directly realizing Sutra school. The first moment of directly realizing selflessness of person, what actually appears to that consciousness? Because previous class it says the appearing object is the aggregates of a person, for example, right? Or something, the impermanent phenomena, the
place. Mm.
You know the specific paragraph, but I don't have the root text with me.
But I'm not sure whether it's correct, the way of seeing the face.
I mean, there's a verse in the text which I cannot find. But what he's actually saying is this: a yogic direct perceiver explicitly realizes, let's say, that the aggregates are devoid of such a person, such a self, a person, right? He realizes that aggregates explicitly, and then implicitly through that, he realizes the selflessness of person. So something like that. So the yogic direct perceiver explicitly realizes the composed phenomenon, the aggregates, yeah, which is the base of the selflessness of a person, right? So he explicitly realizes the aggregates, and implicitly he realizes the selflessness of persons.
So the composed phenomena is actually its appearing object. It does appear to such a consciousness. So such a consciousness actually realizes two truths simultaneously.
Two truths simultaneously?
Yeah. Explicitly, it realizes composed
phenomena.
Okay, on top of that, yeah, because the appearing object is a composed phenomenon. whereas the object of engagement is of engagement is the selflessness of person.
You have problem with the appearing object?
Yeah, I'm just wondering. Then
whatever is a functioning thing is necessarily appearing object with a direct perceiver.
Yeah. So then wouldn't it sound like it's a mistaken consciousness? Because the appearing object is the composed phenomenon.
You mean
the appearing object is not the self?
No, you're saying that there's a
the voidness is a composed phenomenon.
You're saying that the appearing object is impermanent and then object or engagement is permanent.
Yeah. You're talking about with respect to the
and therefore there's a contradiction.
Not saying it's a contradiction. It sounded as more, because the appearing object is not the permanent phenomenon. So it sounded as though that you become mistaken consciousness because the appearing object is not a permanent phenomenon. It's kind of strange because it's not
So what's wrong with a composed phenomenon being the appearing object? It's a direct perceiver, isn't it?
Yeah. But what I meant is with respect to the object, okay, selflessness of phenomena. The appearing object is not selflessness of phenomena, it's a composed phenomena.
Then?
Yeah. Whereas the object of engagement is selflessness of phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Selflessness of persons.
Selflessness of person. So the missing element is appearing object of selflessness of person.
So what's the problem with the composed phenomenon being appearing object of this mind?
It's valid with respect to realizing the composed phenomena. The only thing is that with regards to, let's say, from the perspective of the object of engagement, which is selflessness of person, selflessness of person is not the appearing object, it's the composed phenomenon.
Yeah, then?
Your permanent phenomenon is not the appearing object.
Yes.
So it's a missing appearing object. Huh? It's a missing appearing object. It's just like wrong conscious. Yeah.
So basically you're saying, in order to realize something, it must appear.
For your direct perceiver, it has always been said that appearing object and object engagements are the same. Yeah.
Same.
One of the hand up, I think. Yeah. So. Correct. But if that one is missing, kind of. But it's kind of strange to be saying a mistaken consciousness is correct, but it's strange.
But you accept from the beginning that whatever is a functioning thing is necessarily an appearing object without a perceiver, right?
Functioning thing is not a problem. It's a permanent phenomena. There's not an appearing object.
So if selflessness of person appear, then it will be a problem, right?
Then there will be a problem with regards to manifest phenomena. Permanent phenomena. It's not a manifest phenomena. With regards to that definition, there will be a problem there also.
Yeah.
Either way, I have a problem.
Why? Because? Why?
So whatever the mind realizes, does it necessarily appear to it or not? So when we talk about realization here, we talk about explicitly realized and implicitly realized, right? So whatever is realized When the mind realizes something, you know, that thing that is realized need not be appearing to it, So then, following this, then you have to say that the selflessness of a person does not appear to the yogic direct perceiver apprehending it. Is the selflessness of a person realized by the yogic direct perceiver? Yes. Is the selflessness, does the selflessness of a person appear to yogic direct perceiver apprehending it? No. Are you going to the toilet or? Oh, I see. Hi.
That's what I think. Mine is a simple one.
What?
That's for syllogism. The forward pervasion. Does it imply the reverse pervasion? That means the forward pervasion is states that whatever is the sign has to be a member of a similar class.
So are you saying that if the forward pervasion is established, the counter pervasion is necessarily established as well?
Yeah. So that means the counter pervasion is totally unnecessary.
Oh no, cannot. So basically you say that which is the two modes enough already.
Sorry?
So the correct sign is that which is the two modes is sufficient.
Two modes.
Because
only the fourth provision is necessary.
So that which is the two modes lah. So the definition of a correct sign is that which is two modes. It's sufficient.
Two modes. What is two modes? Because the forward perversion states that the sign, as long as the sign is a member of a similar class, that means as long as the sign is a subset or equal to the similar class, then the syllogism holds. Because the reverse is just that whatever is outside the similar class is not a member of the sign, which is implied.
The non-product is necessarily universally absent from Basically, you're saying once the forward pervasion is established, the counter pervasion is automatically established.
Fulfilled, yes.
So therefore, it follows that the definition of the correct sign is that which is the two modes. It's enough. No need to say that which is the three modes. Essentially, is that right? Two modes enough, right? So of course, in general, whatever if the sign is present in the similar class, right? If the sign is only existent in the similar class, then it definitely is universally absent from the dissimilar class. Yeah, that's clear. But when we say that which is the three modes, you know, we're talking about in relation to the person whom we are trying to establish something. You are trying to establish the three modes for a person. You know. For a person who's for which the three modes may not have been established yet. Because for the person who you are positing the sign, you know, you're stating the sign to, it's not sufficient for him to realize that the sign exists only in a similar class. He may have realized that, but he may still have doubts as to whether the sign is universally absent from the dissimilar class. He's not sure about that yet. So for that reason, therefore, the correct sign is that which is the three modes. So when we talk about that which is the three modes, when we talk about the correct sign, we're not so much talking about the sign itself. Of course, as you say, if the sign is if you have ascertained that if the sign exists only in a similar class, if definitely the sign is universally absent from the dissimilar class. Although that's the case, we're not talking about the sign itself. Although the sign from its own side is like that, but we are stating a reason in order to establish something, you know. Yeah. And so the person who we are proving this, the person in that person's mind, that person must have established the three modes. Yeah. So it's from that perspective, lah. So in our, when we say our, it feels like you are already in Saraji, but anyway, according to our monastic, our college position, there was a common locus between doubt and wrong consciousness. Okay, so according to Sarah J. College position, there is a common locus between doubting consciousness and wrong consciousness. The illustration is a mind which things that reincarnation most likely do not exist. So it is a doubt. It's a doubt tending towards a non-factual, and it is a wrong consciousness. So the mind which thinks that reincarnation is probably bullshit, you know. So it is a mind which is a knower which engages in its object erroneously. Yeah. So what is positive to be the object of this mind? It is reincarnation, isn't it? Yeah. So the object of this mind is reincarnation, past and visualized. And it engages in this object erroneously. Yeah, anyway, so this mind which thinks that reincarnation is probably, doesn't exist, yeah. It is a doubt. It is also a wrong consciousness, yeah. So according to our college position, there is a common locus, yeah. But there are people who also say that there isn't a common locus, and these two are contradictory. So there are those who assert that wrong consciousness and doubting consciousness are mutually exclusive. Yeah. Okay. So there isn't a common locus between the two. Why? Because the wrong consciousness is very decisive about what it believes in. So in the case of reincarnation, reincarnation does not exist whatsoever. It's decisive. Whereas doubt is, two-pointed, you know. Yeah, maybe not. Did somebody ask a question about wrong consciousness?
Just now you are saying something. Yeah.
Oh, watching.
Which one?
What's there to say next? So.
So, Tindresha, that dinema, and the loaded dindo, Savat, that dinema, on the piece of Tamshan, what's the matter?
No. So that's about it for the sevenfold division of consciousness, yeah. So on Thursday we will start on the mental factors, yeah. So the text, yeah. You've got the text, right? So that it's it's easier. It's really easier to handle, yeah. So you should start reading it, yeah. Start reading, yeah.
What?
I got two questions.
You have a few questions.
Two.
Oh.
First one. Referring to the handout on 26 June, the last page that says whatever is an established base is necessarily the object of mode of apprehension of both a conceptual and non-conceptual consciousness. What does that mean?
It means that, no?
Whatever is an established base is necessary the object of mode of apprehension of both a conceptual and a non-conceptual consciousness.
Oh,
How can there be an object of engagement of both a conceptual and a non-conceptual consciousness?
Object of mode of apprehension.
I mean, yeah. How can there be an object of mode of apprehension? That means object of engagement of both a conceptual and a non-conceptual consciousness.
So what's the problem?
How, example, uncompounded space is a permanent phenomenon.
So?
How can it be object of engagement of a non-conceptual consciousness?
You say permanence,
Permanent phenomenon.
Or permanent phenomenon.
How can it be an object of engagement of a non-conceptual consciousness? Because the word both is there. This sentence.
Then? Somebody answered. Yeah. But I'm not going to answer that. Musum ki zinda yu kani, musum ju yu kani chawra sawa.
I kansa ki dami ni sa chawri de.
Kono chua dire tan. Chua di tan.
Okay. So our friend is asking, how can a permanent phenomenon be the object of engagement of a non-conceptual consciousness?
Anybody answer?
Yeah. I think Guo Qing can answer.
Yeah. Okay, so she's saying that for yogic direct perceiver,
realizing selflessness of person.
Selflessness of person is a permanent phenomenon, but it's not the appearing object.
So just think about this. Is there a valid cognizer that directly realize uncomposed space?
Direct perceiver that what again?
What's the question? Is there a direct perceiver? Not direct, but is there a valid cognizer that directly realizes uncomposed space?
Buddha's omniscient mind.
You are reversed.
The question is yes or no.
You are reversed.
Yes,
you are yes,
yes. 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 You are reversed. Ubo, have or not?
Have.
Is there such a valid cognizer?
I think have.
So, no problem really, right? Uncomposed space is the object of engagement or the object of the mode of apprehension of a non-conceptual consciousness, isn't it?
Okay. Then how about, can we say like that? For the eye consciousness, okay, is the direct perceiver in the continuum of ordinary being. So, compounded space can be realized implicitly by the eye consciousness because of able to see lack of obstructive obstructiveness. Yeah, can we say that? That means compounded space, which is permanent phenomena, can be compounded space.
Yeah, compounded space impermanent. Yeah.
Impermanent. Right? The space in the cup, you know.
Compounded, composed, same.
Same. Space for impermanent.
Yes.
Okay, never mind. Think again. Second question. How are existent and non-existent regarded as selfless? What is the reason to say that they are selfless? Both existent and non-existent, they are considered selfless. Yeah, how are they considered selfless?
The non-existent is not established to have a self, right? It's not established as self, right? Is the non-existent established as self?
Oh, okay, no. Oh. Because don't have a...
So yeah, so you try to start reading the new text. Yeah, it was just given out later on, just now.
Okay.
Okay, so we finish. Yeah.